up, don't allow disaster.
Don't give up, friend.
Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever
after. Talking about a forever after.
Don't you give up, don't you dare give in. Don't
welcome, friends, brothers and sisters, clients, family, and our allies. This is Jack Tuckner. I am tonight. Am I on here, Martin? I am here. I'm joined with Deborah O'Rell, and I'm so grateful to have you back, Deborah.
Glad to be back.
Last week I was flying solo, as anyone who is listening knows. It was just me and the intrepid Martin for an entire hour of my rambling on about Title IX. Well, I hope so.
It was important.
It's a very important show. By the way, Martin, I don't hear myself. Am I on, though? I'm not... Okay, perfect. Well, just a little bit. I'm not used to that. Thanks very much. So, well, we're back here. Title IX, I want to tell you, we are back. I hope everyone who heard the show heard at least something of interest, something new. I was all on my lonesome because we didn't have an appropriate Title IX guest that we will have coming up in the next few weeks. In fact, we'll have Christina Brandt Young, who's a senior staff attorney with the Legal Education and Defense Fund, now known as Legal Momentum. That's the national organization for women, their legal defense arm. And she is the Title IX expert. And really, you won't want to miss that show. We'll give you an update, or a heads up, I should say, at least a week in advance with some promos, because that is her sole focus. And, you know, for those who missed last week's show, Title IX is not your mother's Title IX. It's not your grandmother's Title IX, because Title IX was enacted in 1972. But most people think of Title IX really as just women's sports, how it opened up sports for girls. And prior to that, you know, even in high school, after grammar school, girls' participation in sports just dropped precipitously, and there wasn't any reason to give a, forget about sports, there was no reason to give a seat in college to a woman, because better to give it to a man who might actually, you know, they used to call it, as I mentioned, I don't remember who was the first to reference it, probably Senator Birch Bayh, who was the sort of the grandfather of Title IX, that women pursued college degrees to get their Mrs. degree, basically to find a husband, and then went to grad school to find a better husband, but ultimately, you know, dropped out of the labor market. But these days, Title IX is used more often in sex discrimination, sexual violence, and sexual harassment scenarios in colleges, because that is violates Title IX when typically a woman, 95%, other than LGBT type cases, 95% of sexual violence cases in colleges, of course, the survivors are women. And one out of four women that it happens to. So anyway, to not repeat.
I really like the analogy you made. If one in four women were contracting HIV.
Right. Can you imagine? So what I said was, you know, people think of Title IX as like, oh, there's your solution. There's a law. Let's sue them. We have Title IX. Well, you don't. First of all, it's a very difficult, challenging, blunt instrument, this law, and in order to use it, you have to be completely screwed. By the time you're going to use Title IX, your college life is over, and you're going to be thinking about this for the rest of your life. It requires, you know, and what I had said last week that Deborah's referencing is that if instead of one out of four women, which is the current statistic, with 60 colleges currently, 60 universities, including our most august private Ivy League schools, are out of compliance with Title IX, meaning they've screwed up, with respect to investigating and redressing sexual violence, sexual harassment, or sex discrimination on college campuses, typically, 60 schools, including Princeton and many other schools that you wouldn't think, are wildly out of compliance, which basically means, as one of my colleagues said this week on Twitter, doesn't mean you wouldn't send your kid to that school. It might mean you would actually pick one of those schools to send your kid to, because at least they're paying attention now to the issues. They know they're out of compliance, and they know they're under scrutiny, so that they are, you know,
there's a heightened awareness.
So heightened awareness, exactly.
Which is why a discrimination claim in a workplace often is helpful for the workplace because it wakes the employer up, which is why when people call the office, they are every person who calls our office I take as an inspiration, because it does take a certain amount of courage to stand up. But if you don't, if somebody doesn't stand up and say this is wrong, this is what's happening, it doesn't get fixed. So it's always those first people that stand up. So there you go.
By the way, speaking of calling, if anyone wants to call us and pose a question.
Well, what a segue.
That's a nice segue. Please dial 888-874-4888. Again, that's 888-874-4888 is our call-in number, which is a toll-free number, of course.
So do you want to talk about upcoming guests first?
Well, you know what? Not too many of them. We'll have them
next week. Next week.
Well, next week's guest we're very excited about, and you should tune in, Vanessa Merton, who is a professor of law, distinguished professor of law at Pace University School of Law. Also my old mentor, my favorite law professor some 30-odd years ago at the City University of New York Law School at Queens College. And she was and is amazing. She is a Radcliffe College graduate. She is an NYU Law School graduate. And she teaches and directs the Immigration Justice Clinic at Pace University School of Law. She is a dyed-in-the-wool, old-time lefty. She is, a complete through-and-through progressive, probably at least as radical as I am, if not more. Probably it has the bona fides to prove
right.
it. Absolutely. And she's brilliant, and I love her. And she co-founded the Health in the Workplace Clinic that I was a law student intern at. She was the first law school clinic to teach occupational medicine residents from Mount Sinai. That's right. We worked with them. With clinical law students to provide coordinated care, representation, and advocacy for workers injured on the job. So Vanessa she's got a long bio. I won't go into it all now, but all of it is about helping people in her community, helping law students, she almost single-handedly, because she runs, and we'll talk about this next week, but the clinic provides, I'll tell you this now, free legal services to non-citizens who otherwise could not afford legal assistance, and this includes representation on applications for asylum or family-based status in removal proceedings, that's the new fancy euphemism for deportation, and on petitions for crime victims and juvenile immigrants. The clinic attorneys, these student attorneys that are able to practice under her supervision, meet with clients and conduct public education programs at community centers, schools, healthcare providers, and places of worship throughout the Hudson Valley of New York, as well as its state and federal detention centers, the immigration court, federal courts, the United States Supreme Court. She and her students have argued at just phenomenal. And they also frequently collaborate with a residency program in forensic psychiatry at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and the Bronx Psychiatric Center, where Professor Merton is a member of the faculty. I mean, she's just indefatigable, nonstop, progressive, and we're thrilled to have her. You don't want to miss that. She's going to talk about, especially today with everything that's going on with immigration and all the challenges and the...
It'll be great to have an expert on
to
explain in plain language, this is what's happening, this is why it's important.
Exactly.
And then specifically with regard to workplace...
Exactly. With regard to workplace, how about what's going on now with, 50,000 kids just showing up here alone saying, and whether women and children or kids alone, but just showing up at the borders saying, hello, Border Patrol, take me. They're all told that this is where they're going to come and get asylum and food and jobs and, the land of milk and honey. And they are, of course, simply thrown into, very challenging conditions in basically prison,
right?
And of course ultimately removed, i.e. deported. Very sad right now, issues with kids even giving them proper food and medical care. It's outrageous. She'll be the best person to talk about it. That's next week, the 14th, Bastille Day. All of our French Bastille Day celebrators, please just take an hour and tune in to hear Vanessa Merton. So back to today's show. I was talking about Title IX, but today you and I were going to talk about other topics in employment discrimination, were we not?
Yes.
That we don't usually talk about because...
Well, that we haven't spoken
about
yet.
Well, we haven't spoken about yet because we are the Women's Rights in the Workplace show on PRN.FM, Gary Knoll's Progressive Network. And we are proud to be here and proud to talk about, as a law firm that handles, concentrates in women's employment challenges such as pregnancy discrimination, sexual harassment, gender pay disparity, FMLA issues, etc. But discrimination is discrimination. And
right.
While we've talked here about pregnancy issues and sexual harassment, and last week when I was going off on Title IX, I didn't finish. Should I finish my little HIV analogy or no? Next, want to save it for later? See, for those of you, we're not on TV. Deborah's looking at me now with that glassy-eyed, vacant stare, which means, yes, go ahead and do it, but no, don't do it. You missed that opportunity, so I won't do it.
Well, now you have to.
Now I have to. So here's the thing. It's like this Title IX thing. Title IX is a law that was enacted in 1972. It's a powerful, one of the most... It just celebrated its 42nd birthday last week. That's why we had the show. Most powerful civil rights statute in the last 50 years, and has done unbelievably wonderful things for the female sex of our species in terms of opportunities. I mean, it's hard to believe that it was just 50 years ago that medical schools and law schools had quotas of women, and they didn't take all too many. And Title IX changed all of that, but it's vastly underused. And I was just saying, when people say, and they'll call our office and say, oh, I was, my teacher hit on me, let's say, to pick one thing. I have a professor who's given me the googly eyes, and can I bring a Title IX lawsuit? And the answer is no, you cannot, and you would not, and you will not. The reason is it takes a whole... First, you have to get the Office for Civil Rights involved, of the U.S. Department of Education. They're going to investigate it. They're going to try to see what they can do. That's going to be a whole long process that you may not even want to get up to that point if you can avoid that. If they think that there's a violation of the statute, they're going to start their administrative-type proceedings and see if they can get something done by way of consent or a letter, some type of voluntary agreement with the institution. And if they can't, they'll refer it to the United States Department of Justice that could bring a lawsuit. Still doesn't include you, the so-called the victim or the survivor. And it doesn't involve money damages, typically. It involves, which is important, but compliance or injunctive relief or something that the school has to do to fix it. And if that doesn't work, you can bring a lawsuit privately, along with the Department of Justice, but it's a hugely difficult, Sisyphean, uphill, never-ending task, and it largely doesn't result in money damages for you unless you happen to suffer a lot of them, and it's going to be a rare, egregious type of case. So I was saying that it would be like, now that one, they say, and this was, I think, on the front page of Time magazine a couple of weeks ago, that 1 in 4 women are victimized by sexual discrimination, sexual violence, actually, more specifically in college. And what type of an outrageous stat that is, and how do we resolve that and fix that? If 1 out of 4 women were contracting HIV and ultimately coming down with AIDS, and we said we're going to treat them all with AZT and the antiviral cocktails, and it's for free for life because it's in President Obama's executive order. That's awesome. We obviously wouldn't be celebrating that. We would be saying, how do we stop these young women from getting sick to begin with, right? What would we do prophylactically in every way? So that's what we need to do with Title IX. And I had mentioned last week, and one of the other guests that we'll be having this summer is one of the founders of Know Your Nine, 1X, Know Your Nine, a college student. College students run Title IX, founded the website, which is, again, to raise awareness of everything that Title IX should be doing, must do on your campus, and for you to understand as an undergraduate or as a parent who's considering sending their child, male or female, to school, everything that Title IX should mean in terms of your child's safety and your child's access to stress-free, impediment-free, discriminations, violence-free education on the high school and upper, higher education levels. So that was all I wanted to get back to on that because we love Title IX and we're going to get back to it with real experts next in the next coming weeks. So
that was really helpful.
Thank you.
And in explaining the importance of it and
thank
the
you.
Weight.
Okay, thanks. It was a weighty subject. Okay, time to turn down and off your phone.
Yep, sorry.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say...
Well, So you had started saying, but I'll pick up, that we have spoken about a number of women-focused discriminations, because that is primarily where our focus, although 40% of our clients are male also, because discrimination is discrimination. And I thought it might be helpful to talk about some of the other types of discriminations, because we get those calls probably even more than we get pregnancy and sexual harassment. And that being age, disability, race, those types of things. So in terms of, and I just thought that that would be helpful for you to explain a little bit more about what an employee is entitled to. And let's just start with disability discrimination. So this is, first describe disability discrimination.
Well, first let me then just talk about why should you have a disability discrimination case. Before we even get to what that is, how is it that you as an employee have any, do you have any rights at all? Okay, so here's the you know, the people typically think, most right-thinking, nice people figure, that if you work in a place that is unfair to you, or is a so-called hostile work environment, that his phrase has made it into the vernacular, that that's not right, and you could sue, and you could get justice. Well, but here's the answer, the first part of this is, most of us, the vast majority of us, more than well over 90% of us who are working in the United States are so-called at-will employees, right? We work at the pleasure of our corporate master. It literally is a master-servant analysis. That's the framework under the old common law. They're the master, you're the servant. You work at their pleasure. They say jump, you say how high. That's it. And unless you can command a contract, if you have the juice, the leverage, to say, you know what, I want a five-year contract at $150,000 a year, and unless I screw up or get disabled for a certain period of time, or you find, you know, I'm smoking crack in the workplace, you're going to have to pay me $150,000 a year for 5 years. And I'm also bound to you to stay during that period of time. Certainly musicians, athletes, you know, again, certain business folk that can get away with that do, but the vast majority of us don't have that. And
corporate then officers.
Well, that corporate officer at that level, right. If you could say, you want me, you know, if you're Jamie Dimon now, you could say, yeah, I'll go somewhere else. You're going to pay me, you know, whatever, $20 million. I'm going to certainly have a contract of employment. And I'm also going to have a golden parachute when I leave and all of that. But most of us don't. Then talk about what's a collective contract. A group contract is a union contract. Used to be in the 60s and 70s and before Ronald Reagan started the whole corporate counter-revolution that we've all lived through now for 30-some-odd years, close to 40% of the workforce was unionized. I mean, I was a waiter and a bartender in 1970-something in several places where I was a member of a union. You paid some dues. You had a little. I mean, unions are democracies. It's important. That's how you collectively negotiate. That's why it's no surprise, of course, that, you know, the our businesses, the Chamber of Commerce and their toady Congress folk and senators and the 37,000 lobbyists in D.C. are not in favor of unions. They want you to be able to work. It's the right to work for less issue. We want you want to be able to negotiate. You should have the freedom to work for $3 an hour.
Right.
If that's what the market now bears, right? And children should work for $2 an hour. So, but nowadays, since all of the regulations and the laws that have been, you know, just reversed and extinguished over the years due to the lack of bargaining power and Supreme Court decisions in favoring big business, it's about 5%, I think, of the maybe 5% of the non-federal workforce. We're not including postal workers, which are unionized, which is why they want to kill the post office, too, Republicans. But very few people. How many people do you know out there, yourself included and your relatives, who go, I've got a solid union job. I work at a tool and die shop. I make my $22 an hour, and I've got benefits and a vacation and a pension, and I put two kids through college. Nobody. There's no middle class. It's very difficult. You're either professional or successful or an entrepreneur, or, you know, you may be now these days a very challenged working person or a poor person, not earning very much. So unions are very important. But anyway, back to most of us and most of you folks listening are going to just work for employers who could terminate you whenever they want, for any reason they want, or for no reason at all. Christmas Eve, they want to fire you. You worked there for 23 years. They bring you in. They say, we're firing you. Put down your champagne flute. We're sorry that there's a party going on outside. But you ought to stop crying now, because we're going to walk you out. When Leroy, the security guard, escorts you out, they're going to think you're being, you know, arrested like a perp walk. So take some time. Relax. Why are you firing me? You cry. It's been 23 years. I just bought a house. We're not at liberty to say. And they don't have to say. And if they do say, they could say, for any number of reason or no reason, we don't like you anymore. We don't like the way you started parting your hair.
It's not a good fit.
Not a good fit. That's it. Right. We're going in a different direction now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Any number of sort of euphemistic phrases, that's perfect. It's not a good fit. So they don't have to tell you, and you've got no right to know. And it doesn't matter if they do tell you, there's nothing, you got nothing. They could fire you for any dumb ass reason or no reason. Again, it could be because they could tell you, last night I had a dream that you and I were enemies, mortal enemies in another lifetime. And that's right. You killed my grandfather in the 1600s. You're fired. Fired. That's it. You're done. Stick a fork in you. But there are a few things that do protect us still. They still remain until the five crazy men on the Supreme Court get a hold of this too. Perhaps they'll reverse all of this and we could become a true oligarchic plutocracy and have absolutely no rights as we all become serfs, either serfs or, you know, peon serfs or, you know, landowners. But we do have certain laws that still exist, like the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That's another good one, right up there with Title IX. Title VII, it's called. It's the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Here's what it says. They can't discriminate against you in work on the basis of various things about you, like your sex, right? Your gender, sex is the federal, on many states it's called gender, but then it can get a little bit confusing with gender identity. But sex, male or female, you can't be discriminated against on that basis. Race, color, national origin, ethnicity, and there are other amendments like age is included in disability now under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Rehabilitation Act, age under the Age Discrimination and Employment Act and the Older Workers Benefit Protection Act. So there are a number of statutes like that, these laws that now have been around for decades, that prohibit your employer from treating you differently, from degrading, changing, undermining you or the terms, the conditions, the benefits, the privileges, or the pay of your employment if they're doing it because of one of these protected reasons. You told them you're pregnant. You told them you're gay, although actually that is still not protected under federal law, but under many state laws, and I'm just accustomed to saying it because we're here in New York where at least for decades it has been, New York City anyway, protected. But generally, so the general rule is you have zero right to continued employment at your job. For, you know, at any given time, you could be fired and you could also quit. But if you feel that there's some negative, you know, the winds of negative treatment are blowing your way because of something that you feel is not right related to what we've just been discussing. Is it because your alienage? Is it because of where you come from? Do you think now it's because, and we could talk about all these things, you know, is it because you are older? You know, people that obviously we're in an ageist culture. They think you're a little bit over the hill, and now make room. First of all, even in our biggest law firms, it's kind of like make room for the kids. Make room. You had your time. You made your money. You've been here for 30 years. You're 60. You're 60. Many big law firms, by 65, you're done. You know, you got to give. Otherwise, how do the kids? We're going to be until you're 90. You know, you can't just dotter off and fall asleep at your desk. We have to clean out the old. And we do tend to, in our culture, not as in many cultures where, right, we uphold the wisdom of our elders. In our culture, it's like, you know, get them out of sight and out of mind. They don't look too good anymore. And get the young in.
At least they can't be the receptionist.
They can't be the receptionist if you, exactly, you know, too many wrinkles and bags. So that's the long and the short of it. Now, what did you ask me about disability?
Well, I hadn't gotten there yet, but you touched on the two areas in particular that I wanted to focus on, and that is disability and age, because those are, you know, right up there in terms of the discriminations that,
right, exactly.
In terms of the number,
true,
of calls we,
true,
get. So, and do you have a preference? You want to do,
no,
which one first?
No.
Okay, so let's do disability. Let's do age first, since you were just talking about the age. So, what is age discrimination? I'm just going to give you the overview. So, to describe age discrimination, it's being treated differently because of one's age.
Right.
So, oftentimes, people have no idea until they're fired that they're being treated differently, that the downsizing is starting, the winds of downsizing is in the air, business is off, they're going to have to make cutbacks. New manager in town. A number of reasons. But up to that point, everything had been fine. You might be in your 50s, maybe 60s, having had a successful career, and then all of a sudden, you're now either getting a negative review right away, or you're terminated. Just, you're in the batch of people to be let go. And just in the last week, somebody called, late 50s.
She called our law office.
Our law office. She was in her late 50s, was terminated, and part of the story. And this guy is trying to clean house. You know, I'm the secretary of the minutes, and I sat there while he said they had to fire all these doctors, and all the doctors were over 50.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to clean house. They wanted to clean up, get these older people out of here.
Right.
And then came the admin people, and she was among those. Or today there was a call from someone, 61. She'd worked someplace for 22 years, had no real inkling that she was on the chopping block, that there were any problems with her performance,
mm-hmm,
other than... you know, enrollment or whatever,
right,
it was down. And she felt, rather than terminating her, she should have been offered another position, that there was some other position open. But they didn't offer it to her.
Right.
And she was replaced. They offered that other position to a 30-year-old, not her.
Right.
So how does one go about age discrimination and standing up and saying, this is how I feel, what am I entitled to, isn't this wrong?
Well, the first question is, do you believe, as always, that first question is, why do you think they let you go or they fired you? I mean, if someone says, well, I think they fired me because I'm 61. Okay, well, why do you think that? They call you an old biddy? Did someone say put her out to pasture? Have they made remarks that you're slowing down? Has someone made remarks about your looks? Is the company trending youthward and they're just hiring? And as you said, if a woman called and said, I was fired and replaced with a 30-year-old, that already is, you know, that's some evidence of why. Why did they fire you? They could fire you and replace you with anybody they want and say, we're firing you because enrollment is down and we think you stink and we're replacing you with someone else. Remember, you could always say, you know, I was fired and I think it's because I'm the only Lithuanian lesbian in a wheelchair. And you probably are the only Lithuanian lesbian in a wheelchair if that's what you are. And when they replace you, if they do, it might be neither a Lithuanian, a lesbian, or a disabled person. But that doesn't mean it's discriminatory, obviously, unless you have some evidence. Let's start with, again, do you even feel that way? So if you do feel that way, then maybe, when we're talking about age discrimination, first of all, let's just talk about all the different things that make it meaningless and no one cares if you feel that way. If you're fired because your employer is firing lots of people in a... what's known as, right, a downsizing or a reduction in force or a re-engineering or whatever these other words they use to say, like Mitt Romney does, even when they come in these equity guys and just say they basically are destroying the company in order to sort of sell it off, like, you know, piecemeal, and they're the only ones making money from it. But if they do eliminate your company or your job or outsource it somewhere else, doesn't matter if you're 90 and fill in the blank with anything else that you have to say.
If they've eliminated your position, game over.
Game over. If they've eliminated your position, actually game over, because what's the discrimination? There's nobody discriminated against me because that's not nice, because you knew I had two kids in college and I just bought a house? Well, too freaking bad. That's right. That's nobody cares in our culture. There's very harsh out there. There are no, there's very few cushions for most of us. Right. If they eliminate your job, you're done.
Well, if
they
that's
really
what
eliminate
they,
your job.
Well, I was just going to make the distinction. They may say that
right.
they've eliminated your position,
right.
but
well, if they're lying.
Are there essential functions of your job
right.
that make it impossible to eliminate
yes,
your position?
But, you know, the other thing that they can do is say, we've eliminated your job, and you say, yeah, but you really can't eliminate what I do and still run as a company. And they say, well, you know what? We actually can. Here's why. We took the Deborah Orell position that you've had for all this money we paid you for all these years, and the things that you do here, we've divvied them up, right, amongst others who are still here, who may have, let's say, more seniority. We still got rid of your position, and we did. There's nobody in your chair and your PC is in the basement now. But the things that you did that were vitally important, hosting the show, you know, doing the invitations, opening up in the morning, other people are doing, but we still have one less body that's yours. We didn't really replace you. And if they don't replace you, it's hard to ever have to get to first base on a discrimination claim because, again, they could do that if they're just simply saying we had five people, now we have four people. And, it could really, yes, it could be a subterfuge, it could be like smoke and mirrors, but you're going to have to do a lot of tap dancing and figure out how, if they did all that like shell game stuff with you, where follow the pee under the cup and you don't know where it is. It's going to be very difficult. So, yes, if they've eliminated your job or in some way just gotten rid of you
mm-hmm.
and you're not going to be able to say it's because I'm a person of color. And look, there's a non-person, a white person now sitting at my desk. That might go a long way, at least initially, if that's what you've got. And first, again, we start out with, how do you feel about it? I mean, do you really think that? Why do you think that? If you said, I don't know, no one's ever uttered a racist word ever. I mean, I think the place is really, there's a lot of people. There are people of color here who love it here. Then what are we talking about? But back to age, if...
So to make it clear, if they say we've eliminated your position, game over, even if you are the only person being let go, or all the people being let go are over 50, if the position has been eliminated, or the positions has been eliminated, game over.
Well, it's game
but
over.
But let's just say...
They're lying, and you know that.
Okay, so now let's just say, as in the case with this one HR guy who was making it a mission to bring in new blood, and he got rid of all of the people who were in their 50s.
Well, if he's getting rid of all the people that are in their 50s, again, is he replacing them with people in their 30s? If he's getting rid of all the people
yes,
that are in
their... Yes, they're being replaced
well, now
with younger
being
people.
Okay, well, now it's already smells really bad. They're
so
being
it
replaced.
Smells.
So now it sounds, smells like, looks like, feels like age discrimination, because if you're getting rid of all the people in their 50s and you're replacing them with the people in their 30s, perhaps that's exactly what the statute was, you know, enacted to prevent.
So... As we've discussed, if you are in a job and you feel you're being discriminated against, you need to formally notify your employer,
right.
meaning put it in writing.
Well, first of all, let me just talk about age. Age Discrimination and Employment Act on the federal law is for anybody only, anybody over 40. So the first thing is, it's not young discrimination like it is in New York State and in other states. It's just age, period. So it could be so-called reverse age discrimination. So if you say, which we've had,
mm-hmm.
I'm 18, 19, I'm 22, I'm talented, everything, they just say I look like you did. Nobody takes me seriously. I'm 23, and they're not going to send me out with clients. They say she's a little pisher or she's a kid. And they then replace you with a 40-year-old. It could be reverse age discrimination under at least New York law and certain state laws. Federal law is only one direction. You have to be old. Okay, so you have to be over 40.
Well, that's why I was focusing on that, because that's really the majority of
exactly,
the falls.
Exactly, of course.
So
you are over 40. That's
so
what
you cannot. So you're not feeling this. Most of them, rarely do they see it before. Until it gets right down to the end. There's layoffs coming. I know I'm going to be part of this because I'm old. They want to get rid of the old people. As people have retired or quit or moved on, they're bringing in the 20 and 30-year-olds. So I know. So there's often, with a lot of people calling in, there's often no opportunity because the next thing they know is they've been fired.
Yeah.
They've been terminated.
No opportunity for what?
For notification.
Oh, okay.
So the first they're feeling it is they kind of thought it, but nothing really happened. Nothing was said. And then they were terminated, and they truly believe it is because of their age. They're replaced. The position was taken by a 30-year-old.
Okay. Well, if you truly believe that it's because of your age, and again, if you just turned 40 and you're healthy and young and vital and vibrant and fit and what have you, and you don't, and you're replaced by a 30-year-old, it's not like it's going to be some formula that you're going to now spend 5 years in litigation and going to go, they needed to hire someone 10 years younger than you. Why? I mean, it's going to have to be. And this is where, if you're already fired, to take the scenario, wherever you
yes.
happen to live, well, you're going to probably need to start calling a couple lawyers in your area, employment lawyers who specialize in employment and specialize in representing workers, not companies, because you're going to want some feedback. Does this sound like something we're all going to spend years on? But yes, if you feel that because of your liver-spotted 55-year-old hands, and everything else about you, that you now, or maybe you are moving a little bit slower. Maybe we've had, you know, that's what they say. We don't, or it's just a very, you know, you work, you're a salesperson in a happening type of a place, and somebody just decides that, you know what, you're fired because you don't look the part anymore, and you're not going to sell as much because of your wrinkles or whatever. Yes, that's illegal, and you should find out.
So your employer is not allowed to young up.
That's right.
The company.
Of course not. No.
They're not allowed to get rid of the older people so that they can bring in, as you were just saying, like law firms, you know, get the old guys out of there.
Right.
So the young guys, because obviously they don't bring in women, the young
right.
people in. They're not, that is against the law.
It's illegal. It's totally illegal. It's what, you know, it's illegal. First of all, age, you have to have under federal law 20 employees, 20. So people who work for companies that don't have 20 employees, you're SOL, okay? Not statute of limitations, that's shit out of luck. That is, if it's, you know, if your employer has 18 employees, you're not bringing an age case. Now, in your state, you probably can, and like I mentioned before, in New York State and in New York City, both New York State and New York City, the age statute is anything over 18.
What about New Jersey and Connecticut?
I don't know offhand. I don't know. I don't know. I think actually in Connecticut it's 40, and I don't remember New Jersey. 18 is sort of a New York thing. It's usually tied to the federal law because
yeah.
how many people actually, you know, in our culture
right.
have that in the reverse? And it's kind of like everybody feels real sorry for you. You know, you lost your job at 26. You know, okay,
yeah.
go find another one. But so usually it's about you're getting tossed out on your ear. So it's illegal to do that. If they're younging up, assuming that's an Urban Dictionary phrase, if people would understand that.
No, I thought you just said it.
No, younging up? I don't think I said that. Younging up. Yeah, let's see if we...
Oh.
There we go. Our studio audience finds that funny. See that? Look at that. Oh, we have to do it. Oh, they think it's hysterical here. Okay, so we, you know, yes, it's illegal to... If you lose your job because of your age and you feel that way, yes, then go see a lawyer and maybe you'll have... Age cases are the best. Actually, age discrimination cases, many lawyers will tell you, are their favorite.
Why?
Because people who get fired when they're older usually make way more money than all those young ones who call us and, you know, have been working at 22 and they're making $17,500 and
mm-hmm.
they've had the job for 3 weeks and they're pregnant. If you get those cases where people make $175,000... First of all, their damages are way higher, so-called. That's for obvious reasons. And two, them older ones ain't going to find a replacement job so quick. So it's like if you've got a 59-year-old person who you just put out to pasture and they work 30 years in this company, and now, yeah, go find another $175,000 a year job at 60, right?
Right.
But you try. You know, and what are you going to get, especially these days? You'll be working in Barnes & Noble. Forget that. Barnes & Noble's are closed now. But, you know, whatever, some $10 an hour job. So if you win that, if you go see a lawyer and like, okay, now that might be from 59 and a half to 65. You have 6 years. They're going to pay you for what they just took away from you, not to mention all that was that missing in your pension. So those are, they're really good cases when they're good cases, if you know what I mean. But you do need 20 employees unless it's a Rehabilitation Act case. No, I'm sorry, that's under disability. No, under the Older Workers Benefit Act. I'm sorry, that's disability again. It's still 20, except in your state, like in New York, four. You know, so you could still, in New York, if you're 19 and you think it's age discrimination, you could just have four employees and any age works. But generally when people are talking about age, you'd have to be over 40. And if you're 41, you know, yes, it counts. But unless there's a, you know, they hired a 22-year-old, it's not going to, oh, they hired a 37-year-old? Okay, problem. You know,
right.
Obvious problem.
Right. It has to be a fairly obvious age issue.
Well, like, or provable, you know.
Right.
How about one
right.
or both? I mean, it
right.
has to be something. Because, again, like I mentioned just about Title IX, you're not going to, like, unlike on Boston Legal, you're not resolving this in an hour after hiring Denny Crane. You know, who comes out of retirement with Denny Crane, who takes your case pro bono and tries it on Tuesday, and you saw him on Monday, and Thursday you're being carried around the city, and it's all in an hour. And that's what happens there, and people think that. Unfortunately, it's like you're going to have 5 years and an asshole lawyers to deal with, and it's just so, who wants to wish a lawsuit on their worst enemy, really? You don't. So, no, but, you know, again, you might be able to settle the case, and you might, why shouldn't you stand up for yourself? So if you or your family or parent or someone loses a, you know, and that's, how frightening is that these days?
Well,
with, and there's no,
hello.
There's no, and there's, you know, again, what cushion, what backup, what
right.
backup do we have?
Right.
So jobs are very important to people, you know, and again, this, and we don't have enough of them because we're not investing in our country. This is a given.
Right.
Okay, so when you lose your job, my God, I don't, you know. I've seen judges literally get on the bench, one of my favorite old judges now, deceased, he used to get on the bench and say, my God, he would just like rub his robes and say, am I grateful for this job? You know, he used to be in the private sector, and he knew he had this $160,000 a year job till he died or retired. And, yeah, so is age, it's a very important issue, but just because you're over 40 and you're fired, unlike what many people think, if they say, well, yeah, you should see a lawyer. You should see a few lawyers. You should talk to a few, get a few free consultations on the phone from lawyers who will just tell you when they're not selling you anything, hopefully, whether they think you have a case, so-called, do I have a case? Maybe you could settle and get, you know, a year's pay or something, or, you know, something out of it and teach them a lesson, because that's how anything ever gets done, you know, civil
right.
rights, one person at a time.
Right, exactly.
So that's no longer the sort of age discrimination.
All right. Well, I think that was just, you know, important to clarify.
Yeah.
So, disability. Now, this one, do you have a preamble to disability before I get in with the questions?
A preamble here. Let me see if I have right here. Oh, I have. They love that in our studio. I tell you, we have a very lively audience today. You see everything. I even have a waiter here. He dropped his dishes again. And I don't think Martin picks up any of this. Who's not even at his engineering. Did you get all that crashing, Martin? Okay, my sound effects, I have to get good at them. So, question, please, Deborah.
Okay, so disability.
Yes.
What are employee rights when it comes to being or becoming disabled? And the difference between, or is there a difference mm-hmm. between, suppose you get hurt on the job, and, you know, you need to be out for a little while because, you know, maybe it was your back or whatever. You got hurt on the job. The beer case fell on you. You have physical therapy. You're out for a little while, but then you're coming back.
Right.
Or is there a difference? What if you are now diagnosed with cancer and you're going to be out for a little while and you have to come back and maybe treatment and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when a disability mm-hmm. impacts your ability to work, what are your rights? What are you entitled to?
Great question. You know, we need to do a whole show on this and bring Bill back here for this. No, we do. It's a whole show.
I know.
Because disability
I want
is
you
almost
to.
More important than, not more important, but it's critical because many of us, what happens when this happens, and we'll all get old, but we could also be young and have a disability, including a pregnancy disability, right?
Well, exactly.
Huge issue.
This is why...
Well, here's the long and the short of it. Yes, there's a big difference between... I guess here's one way to... Okay, so if you have a disability, a bona fide disability, a covered disability, that's important because... Not every disability, at least under federal law, under the Americans with Disabilities Act, generally speaking, and it was really bad until it was amended in 2009. But prior to that, it had to be your disability, your bona fide disability, had to be some condition that substantially impaired a major life activity of yours, like walking, breathing, sleeping, sex, seeing. It had to be, so it can't be temporary. It wasn't a common cold. It wasn't certainly your pregnancy. It couldn't be generally a duration of under 6 months. It had to be, sort of serious and permanent. The usual list of, cancer and blindness and quadriplegia, and stuff that was really kind of a lot of people were out of the box on that. And then it has to be your employer. It's a balancing test. Someone who's qualified for the position, with or without an accommodation, meaning obviously you're qualified to do the job, then the employer has to balance that with, are you asking for an accommodation? That's the phrase, a reasonable accommodation. What do you need your employer to do so that you can continue to add value to their workplace and perform the essential functions of your job, even though you have a disability? In other words, do you now need some time, first of all? Do you need a month or 2 months or 3 months off? And how much time do you need to convalesce to get back to work? And the employer has to balance that against, is it an undue hardship on them? How is it unreasonable? It's just too much. What are you asking them to do? You were in a car accident. Here was a case that we had against a large, very large internet transnational company. Woman worked there for over 20 years. She was in a really bad car accident, hospital for months, traction for 6 months. Wasn't in a position to come back for 18 months to work. I mean, really bad. And they waited because they did otherwise love her. They waited about 9 months or a year or so. They didn't even, just like, get well, do whatever, you're on disability. And then she finally got a letter that said, by the way, hope you're doing real well. You're no longer obviously employed here, but, if you're ever ready to come back, give us a quick shout. And we'll see if we have a job open for you. And then she came and the whole family to our office. Well, how can they do this? What do you mean? Can they fire her? Yes, it's 18 months. It's a year. They could fire you. You don't have unlimited amount of time. So the question is, do you, first of all, have some kind of a disability that's protected under law? And secondly, what do you need? What is the disability? Because it's just generally illegal to treat people differently in the workplace, to not hire them, fire them, ask about it, to meddle in their disability issues. It's now definitely protected, but certainly to a point. And is it an undue hardship? An example I routinely give clients is let's say you have macular degeneration and your ophthalmologist says to you, you're 52 years old. I said this to a 52-year-old woman today. You're 52 years old and you're losing your vision, but very slowly, and your ophthalmologist says, you know what, you'll be okay. I mean, if you may go blind, you really do have this, but it'll be 20 years before you do, and it's very slow progressing. Ask your employer now, when you have 10% diminishment, to get you a new monitor, a special monitor they sell at this blind shop or whatever, the visually impaired shop, that will help you be able to do your job. It costs $147.98. You ask your employer to do that's obviously reasonable. I'm using that as an example of if they don't give you that monitor and you can't do your job and they fire you, that's a disability discrimination, clearly. But what about to take it to the other direction? You go blind entirely and you say to your employer, you know what, unfortunately I went blind this weekend and, I proofread. So can you hire someone to read to me? And at least I know what, they can spell it. I know how things should be spelled. Probably an undue hardship, right? They're not going to hire two people for your job. We're not equipped for Braille. We're not doing that. So that would be unreasonable and therefore they don't have to do it. But generally, and then of course, there is the federal law, which is most conservative. Many states, again, I don't know about your state if you're in, Mississippi. And if you're in Mississippi, it's probably not more
they're
liberal.
They're probably not listening this show.
They're probably not listening. Well, that's probably not fair. They have,
it's Bill, probably true,
as
though.
Bill Maher says.
It might not be fair.
That's true. Now we'll get calls and letters, you see. All these angry emails from those who listen and don't really listen. So But if you live in a place like in New York or in Connecticut or New Jersey, the disability, especially in New York, and that's the laws that we know best, are much more progressive and liberal and employee-oriented. It could be as minor as something that's known as an impairment, any kind of condition, anything. I mean, your neurosis for the week. Anything qualifies as putting the employer on notice, as long as you tell your employer, you know what, I'm having a nervous breakdown this week. And literally, even if you called it that and you just said, I'm like, I'm bugging out. I don't even know what to do. I'm going to like go see my doctor, and I'm having like a panic attack. What should I do? I have to call in sick, just like I'm saying now. That's covered. Now, not under federal law. That's not covered under federal law, but that's certainly covered under New York law. They have to, and here's what is federal, state, city, wherever you are, what every employer has to do is engage in a process with the employee, at least in New York, known as an interactive process, and known as that under federal law as well, where they say to the employee, what do you need? Do you need to come in at 10 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock to not be in rush hour because of your cast, and you'll stay an hour later? We have to talk about this. We can't just say, sorry, you know what, why should we bother letting you come at 11 and work till 7 when everybody else works 9 to 5? Because you freaking have to, because I have a disability, and under the law, you have to engage in this process with me, otherwise they wouldn't. And certainly before the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was not very long ago, 1991, they didn't have to do squat, except, you know, if in your jurisdiction, like in New York City, which has always been somewhat progressive, you know, there have been laws. Was there more to that question?
Well, is there a difference between being...
Oh, yes. Well, can I just say, when you ask me, like, what happens if it falls on your head?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and this is the other sort of part of reasonable accommodation. You have to be able to work. You have to be able to work with a reasonable accommodation. So, for instance, like the case that you saw today, because I copied you on the email about the one I was supposed to talk about litigation, and I said, what case is this? There's no case. There was no case because, perfect, it was just today. This woman had a disability, and they fired her when she came back. Like, she did come back from a moment, and she was out for a very long time. She had a torn rotator cuff and a torn this and that. She was in nursing, but her job was basically quite physical. And they said to her, well, here's the long and the short of it. They fired her, but then she went out on workers' comp that she was out before, and then she applied for SSD, Social Security Disability, both with lawyers who do this, all the time, as lawyers must, filling out the box in the SSD and the workers' comp form that say, I'm totally disabled. I can't work. Help me. Give me SSD. I'm not able to work. She kind of, and I'm not saying she did anything wrong, but forget, there's no case. Because if you can't work, you can't work. They didn't discriminate against you. You're saying you're down for the count. You can't work. So even though there was some, it was unfortunate with her because they basically put her in that position because maybe they could have given her, thanks, Martin, maybe they could have given her light duty. But the problem is she's getting disability and the government thinks she can't work, and that's why she's getting her whatever she's getting. Might not, well, certainly isn't what she was earning, and it's unfortunate that in our culture you have to fight for those. And, you know, they're getting stingier and stingier, the government. We should be able to take care of the people who she worked for. She worked for 25 years for this institution, was in her 50s, and they should be able to. We have enough money for everything, for all kinds of corporate subsidies and welfare. We should be able to, for what?
Wars.
Exactly. For wars, we should be able to feed our kids and, you know, take care of people who can't work. But we don't do that because we've strayed far.
Okay, and... when does someone qualify for workers' comp?
Well, that's not a state by state thing.
Okay.
Actually, I can answer the question. You qualify for workers' comp when you're injured on the job, period.
Okay.
Has to be on the job.
On the job.
Right.
And you're going to be out for a certain period of time. It's
right.
Not an indefinite.
Well, it can be. No, it can be indefinite. If you're on the job and the ceiling falls on your head and you're really messed up, let's say you're in a wheelchair now, you're going to get, and you can't, here's the thing, you can't sue your employer for physical injuries when it happens on the job. That's just one of those. So even if the ceiling, you might be able to sue the people who made the ceiling, but you can't, if you work for J.P. Morgan Chase and you know, the ceiling falls on your head while you're sitting at your desk, you can sue Chase Bank for that. So what you get is perhaps lifetime. It'll be lifetime. You're permanently, totally disabled. And you might get $1,200 a month or whatever it is, based whatever the max is, because you were injured on the job. You might also be, as this woman was today, then eligible for SSD. But the workers' comp part is just because what happened, just like with her,
because
she was
the
saying
the accident happened
or the
at
injury
the job.
Was, or she argued that a rotated cuff got that way because she was lifting all these obese men. It's a job-related disability.
Right. So there is a distinction with, let's say, cancer. And I only say that because that's a, you're going to be out for a while with surgery and then, you know, subsequent treatment where you can come back. With
how long will you be out? And this is important for the
right.
We just covered this. How long will you be out? It's important that, for instance, in the FMLA, which dovetails with it, if you happen to qualify and there's 50 employees in your company, they have to give you 12 weeks anyway.
But that's unpaid.
It's unpaid, but at least it's guaranteed. If you're getting chemo and radiation, they can't just put you out on your ill ass, now, excuse me, and not bring you back. But so it all depends now.
And then you hopefully can stay on your insurance plan while you're out.
Hopefully you can stay on your plan, and hopefully your company is paying.
So that would be the
well, because you're still an employee and they should be paying
right,
it anyway.
Right, that's why I'm clarifying.
Although if you're on workers' comp, it takes on a different tone. And then
but you're
some,
not on workers' comp for
oh,
a
cancer. We're talking about, right.
Right.
Yes, hopefully you can. But again, it depends on.
Or heart attack. You
right.
Know, those
you know
kinds
what?
Of.
If you're out, at least as you know.
Broken leg where you have
right.
Rehab after.
Right. So in most states and in most places, if you break your leg in an accident.
Well, like you hurt your arm,
right.
And you're on prolonged, you know, physical therapy.
Right.
So you happen to be able to go to physical therapy when you need to go and when it's convenient.
Right.
But I, as a worker, might have to try and make my appointments around the convenience of my job.
Right, you might.
And so, therefore, I would be asking for a reasonable accommodation. Like I said, I'm trying to make them
absolutely.
At the end of the day. I'm trying to make them at the beginning. I'm not taking the whole day.
Like that client we had who had breast cancer, and she was running to, and she worked for a law firm.
Right.
And she was running, literally didn't miss a day.
Yeah,
she was running to Sloan Kettering.
Yeah.
She was running to Sloan Kettering
on
the middle of the day, and then she was working extra hours to make up for her chemo and radiation. I mean, it was enough.
Yeah, that was a horrible case.
So, but again, they worked with, you know, they also ended up firing her because she was missing a lot of time, but it also was a case that we then took, and
yeah.
We ultimately settled it for her. But it's,
so,
the, you know,
right.
the question is always, when it comes to disability, if you're able to work, you're saying to your employer, I can work, I can do this job, I just need you to help me, I need to work from home 2 or 3 days a week for a while, I need X number of days out, I'll be back with bells on, document it, get notes from your physician,
right.
Make sure you send those notes, don't let your physician, one last important one, doctors often cover their own asses by saying he or she can't lift more than a pencil and she needs to be out for 6 months so that, you know, they're covering themselves from malpractice. Make sure that you're not being, you're not telling your employer
too
that you
narrow.
Need more, too narrow or too broad, too much,
right.
That you need too much time off, or if you can't, you know you could lift a pencil, you know you could lift 30, you know, yes, you shouldn't be lifting up boulders or whatever you may do up and
or
downstairs.
Big,
heart attack, a big heavy man. But when the doctor says no more than 5 pounds just because that's what they do, you may need to push back a little and say, hey, doc, this is my job. I can lift more than that. Because your employer will take that seriously and say, you can't lift more than 5 pounds. So how are you supposed to, you know,
do this job?
So that is extremely important. We are now out of time.
See,
this
we
was fun.
Always run
this was fun.
Out of time.
This was
I
good.
Just
I hope this
point
was empowering. Yes,
again.
You pointed
we
out,
run,
well,
okay.
I babbled, but you were here to help me.
Because I did want to try and cover race a little bit, but that'll be another show.
Another show on race
yes.
And color. So we hope you had fun. It's Jack Tuckner, Deborah O'Rell, the women's rights in the workplace, activists and advocates and lawyers. And we will see you next week for our immigration show with Vanessa Merton. Boy, are we excited.
Yes.
Until then, have a strong and powerful week. See ya.
Don't quit.
Don't quit.